This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
The National Student Financial Aid Scheme will increase the student living allowance by 10% and backdate it to the beginning of the 2023 academic year. I'll read that again for you. The National Student Financial Aid Scheme, NSFAS, will increase the student living allowance by 10% and backdate it to the beginning of the 2023 academic year. Now, of course, we're speaking to Slomezi Skosana. Slomezi Skosana is going to join me here on Power Perspective, NSFAS spokesperson. Slomezi, welcome to Power 98.7 at this particular late hour. Slomezi, I appreciate it.
Good evening, Denzel. I'm happy to be on Power Perspective tonight. I've never been on radio this time of the night, so it's for the first time, so I'm looking forward to it.
Slomezi, welcome. You know what? People do new things in this new South Africa, Chief.
You know, I realize that. Look, I'm a superstitious person, so I should be in some kind of an intimate meeting with my ancestors this time of the evening. But you decided to call me here, so I hope they won't take umbrage, you know, to you talking to me at this time of the night.
And I hope they, and Slomezi, I'm hoping they don't deal with me then, because I'm the one.
I cannot guarantee that, Denzel.
Slomezi, but thank you so much, bro. Are you good, my man?
I'm good, my brother. Thank you so much for welcoming me to your hour.
Sure. And you'll be surprised, Slomezi. You know, at who listens at this particular night to Power Perspective, we've just, you know, been able to get so many people calling in, so many people listening to Power Perspective, that, you know what, it's become one of the areas where and spotlights now, where people do want to have all sorts of conversations. You know, it doesn't really matter how important, you know, whether they're happening at 11 o'clock or they're happening at 9 o'clock or early on breakfast. You know what, there's enough people who are listening all the time. But
That's the basis for my curiosity, man. I was thinking, gee, who would be listening during this time of the night? But then I thought burning the midnight oil is the character of students. Perhaps there's somebody listening, from that.
Not just perhaps somebody's listening. Not just perhaps, Slomezi. Did you listen to the previous conversation that we've just had, Slomezi?
The one about
Tshwane and between the DA and the ANC.
Exactly. Yeah, yes, I did.
Let me tell you about the amount of callers who were calling in to be part of the conversation.
Wow.
Yes. So
unbelievable.
Unbelievable the amount of callers. At some point, you've actually just got to quit and say, you know what, to complete the conversation, I can only take so many callers, you know? But Slomezi, you're doing something radical. You're doing something important. I think you're doing something, that obviously students are going to be very, very happy for. Let's just talk about this increased living, and I want to emphasize the terminology on the language, increased living allowance 10%.
Yeah.
Is the living allowance anything, and I want you to clarify that for me, is the living allowance anything different to any of the other allowances? I suppose there's the monies for the actual fees. I suppose there's housing arrangements, there's all sorts of other fees. Increase the living allowance. What aspect is that, or is it a collective term for various things?
Thank you, Denzel, for asking that question, because the minute you put too much emphasis on it, it would appear like it's the one and only thing.
Absolutely.
That, you know, NSFAS would offer.
Yeah.
But I have to highlight that this is in addition to other, you know, forms of supporting a student.
And that's exactly, I think, the clarification I wanted you to put forward here.
Yes. For example, you would have money for tuition and then money for accommodation.
Yeah.
And then as well as some money for study material, such as books and so on.
Yeah.
And now when it comes to living allowance, it's in addition to all of that.
Yeah.
Because what the living allowance is for, it's for things such as your meals, your upkeep, your welfare, your toiletries, you know, things that you would buy really to smell good and do good.
Yeah.
If I were to just digress a little bit.
Yeah. No, I got you.
Yes, that is what it's about. Now, what has happened, as you would agree with me, Denzel, in the last 3 years, I mean, since the pandemic, people have been going through difficult times. And as if the pandemic was not enough, you had your war in Ukraine, which just threw the supply chains worldwide into a complete state of disarray, which had a result of, you know, bringing about exorbitant prices for food, stuff, and so on. So in that period, for some reasons I may not even explain myself, there was no increase on these allowances. They've always been like that the last 3 years.
Yeah.
But then, and as far as, you know, in the course of engaging all stakeholders, including the National Student Union, SAUS, we were engaged in very robust discussions, very vigorous ones, as we were trying to, you know, sink our teeth into this whole business of always commencing the year with protests and unrest, sometimes on campuses. But then we came to some consensus that, you know, it is time we pushed up, you know, or rather increased the allowances, given what I've just painted as a big picture. But, you know, we've got funding policies and guidelines. And you can't change midstream, you know, these, you know, some of these policies without the concurrence of the Minister of Higher Education, Science and Innovation. So then after interacting with the stakeholders, who predominantly were the students, we then, as NSFAS, through our board, made representations to Minister Dr. Blayton Zimande, who was very thoughtful and considerate, you know, or rather sympathetic to our representations. And he granted the concurrence, which said that we could increase the student allowances, which we did so by 10%.
Sure. And so those conversations, those proposals that were put before him, I'm assuming a few weeks ago, those would come after you would have also then engaged with the South African, you know, Union of Students, SAUS, and others and other students, and he would have looked at the figures, and he would have looked at the plight, and he would have looked at the reasoning, and he would have said, you know what, it makes sense. And then obviously you're backdating it to the academic beginning of the academic year. The beginning of the academic year, for all intents and purposes, would be what? February?
Yes, it would be. It would be February. You know, Denzel, something interesting that most people would not be aware of, which I've attempted, you know, to put across.
Yeah.
Is this sort of, I call it misalignment, but I'm not sure whether I'm not using too strong a word, you know, between the commencement of the academic year as well as our commencement of the financial year as NSFAS.
Don't worry, Slumezi. Dr. Blayden Zimande uses the exact term. I had him here on two occasions, you know, in recent times, and he also talks about the misalignment.
Yes, but you know, it's it shouldn't sound, you know, that negative. I think it's just an indication that in the normal run of things, the academic year would start before our financial year starts, which would mean that theoretically we would have a delayed transfer of funds to the institutions. But through his leadership, of course, Dr. Blayton Zimande, we've been able to address that as an intrinsic sort of problem, where what we do in the beginning of the year, usually before the 31st of January, we would transfer a certain percentage of the funding to the institutions, so that we can give the institutions a buffer amount that they can give or disperse to the students in the form of allowances before our budget in March, April kicks in. So that is based on a simple sort of formula where we give the said institution about 20% of their previous year's overall invoice, because normally when it comes to the subsequent disbursement of the allowances, we would then expect the institutions to give us information relating to registration. What do I mean by that? That the student actually has an institution that has admitted him or her, and that the institution has accommodation for that person, because that is another level at which the funding is confirmed. But prior to that, you would find that those that are coming into the system for the first time, like the matriculants that have just passed, at that stage, we do not know whether they have been accepted by the institutions and so on. And sometimes they are already on campus, but there would be some sluggishness on the part of some institution to give NSFAS the required data to sort of consummate the funding decision. So we've been very innovative, rather, in that space, so that the first months, like February and March, the students are covered in terms of allowances.
And they would not normally have been because of that misalignment.
I think that's
absolutely
incidental.
And he, you know, he had a long chat with me about that about a month ago, and he said, you know, one of the big concerns that they did have was exactly this thing that you have just brought up. And he said, for some or other reason, it is there, and it's just been, you know, it's been happening for years, and it needs for some other reason now it needs to be fixed. And I'm really, really glad, you know, that something's been done about it. Let's get back. Okay, sure, Slumezi.
No, I just wanted to mention that you know, without painting other people in a, or rather portraying them in a bad light, is that our system at NSFAS, in terms of how it updates itself, it's self-authenticating and updating almost on a second by second basis. That is to say that sometimes a student would check their status and says, okay, it's at step three or step two, you know, awaiting or pending, something like that. And then when we check the information, or rather the status of the application or the registration data with the institution, you would find that they would not have checked what the funding status of the said student is. So there has been that problem of communication where NSFAS would be waiting for the institution to give us the registration data, and the institution is waiting you know, for NSFAS to give them the list of eligible beneficiaries. So what we have done as NSFAS, we have gone further to say, no, let's publish the list on our portal. And then the universities or the institutions have access to that list. It can't be accessed by anybody. It's code-driven. They can just say, okay, if the student comes to them and say, I've been approved for funding by NSFAS,
the verification is easy.
Yes, they can log in and verify. So that there aren't these delays that we've been experiencing. And on campuses during protests, people will just lay the blame on NSFAS having not transferred this or that money and so on. You know, so we're resolving that. I think my minister is correct in saying that it's been coming up time and again, but we have gotten closer. We have huddled up as stakeholders, that is the students, the universities, because this has been like a perennial challenge. So we are addressing it. We hope that in the coming years, the causes of our confrontation will be different.
Slomezi, let's talk about the 10% a little bit, just to put some meat onto the conversation here. What is the 10% increased living allowance of 10%? Can you give us any particular numbers where a student would have been getting a living allowance and just indicate to us what that new figure would have been, what it would have been and what it would be now?
Well, it was previously sitting at 15,750.
Yeah.
And then it's now 16,500. So, yeah.
Okay. I see the 10% increase in that.
Yes.
And is that an annual or monthly contribution to that particular student?
This is annual.
Yeah.
You would remember that in addition to all this, you would have your book allowance or learning material allowance covered.
No, sure, yeah.
You have your accommodation already covered. You have your tuition already covered.
And I think the accommodation would be 45,000 a year annually, giving them a monthly allowance of 4,500 rand per month over 10 months.
Yes, correct. Depending on how the arrangement is, with the institution. Like now, Denzel, I have to draw a small distinction.
Sure.
As to how we have dealt with it historically and how we are currently, proposing to deal with it. In the case of, for example, universities, at the moment, the cap for accommodation is standing at 61,500 for accommodation that is offered by the university and is catered for.
Yeah.
But for accommodation that is not catered for, as well as accommodation that is private, that one, the cap stands at 45,000, which has been like the focus of many.
Yeah.
Not the information about the adjustment on the university catered one has not come through, and people have just tended, to ignore that that part.
No. So for where universities are considered, the cap would be 61,000 more or less, and for private residences, it would be 45,000.
Correct. So, that's what the cap would cover.
Mm.
But there has been mixed responses to this, I guess, because of the communication.
Mm.
But once we engaged, robustly with the students, they realized that at first the argument was, look, NSFAS is unreasonable in putting a cap at 45,000.
Yeah. So the argument would be, if that one's getting 61,000, I should also be getting 61,000.
Or
more or less.
Yeah. Look at it this way, Denzel.
Mm.
That a private accommodation last year was already charging 60,000 or 70,000.
Mm.
So
it could go up. It could go up to much, much more. Yeah.
Yes, you can't go down to a lower figure when already your benchmark should be that.
Mm.
But because of the research that as NSFAS we conducted, and of course with the assistance of the of private expertise, we were amazed at the fact that there were private accommodation establishments that were charging 28,000 rand per annum. And others that would go as far up as 90,000.
Mm.
So with the support of our board, we visited, these accommodation establishments for students. And you would find that a typical student room would have certain things, like there would be in terms of the norms and standards that were approved or signed by the minister.
Mm.
And then you look at the difference. Somebody pays 28,000 and another pays 70,000. Then you say, okay, let me step into a student room that is paying 70,000 or 90,000.
Yeah.
Is that a polar a post-apedic silly bed there, cloud nine. What is different?
Mirrors on the wall and on the ceiling and everywhere else.
You know what? Swivel and tilt chairs and, you know, all the embellishments that you would expect. It's an ordinary room. And in some cases, what was said was that even the ones that the students were paying 7,000 for, they were paired. It wasn't just one person in the room. It's two people paying 7,000, 14,000.
And that's taking advantage. And that's taking advantage of the system and the need that students have for accommodation. That ultimately unscrupulous individuals taking advantage of the system.
Definitely, Denzel. I will just draw you a picture of how easy it is for people to take advantage of this by using UKZN as an example. UKZN last year accommodated 16,500 on its own campuses, as well as other maybe arrangements that they would have made with private accommodation. 16,500. Take that figure. And then in 2023, now they accommodated 19,500, which pushed it with about 2,005.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what would the university have done? What miracle would the university have performed to accommodate 2,500 students more?
Yeah.
Given its buildings and its capacities.
Sure.
But that's not the point I'm driving at, Denzel.
Yeah.
The point I'm driving at is that according to the information that they put out there, they had actually received 23,000 applications. So can you see that even if the University of Natal performed a miracle of accommodating 2,500 in addition to what they were used to, they actually still had a backlog of 4,000. If theoretically they had taken up all the applications that they received.
Sure.
So what I'm trying to get across is that the problem of student accommodation is bigger than we realize. It's not a question of the cap. It's not a question of having buildings out there available but standing empty because NSFAS has said it's putting a cap. Therefore, as soon as we lift the cap, the buildings would be immediately occupied.
Let me ask you this, Slumezi. How much pressure is government, is NSFAS and everybody sitting in the system putting on these institutions, and I'm talking about the tertiary institutions, of acquiring more accommodation, of extending and expanding, you know, their own networks instead of just looking, you know, into the private space, because obviously, you know, there other things begin to happen and, you know, we can't exclude that. But is there any pressure on the institutions themselves to say, listen, you know, you need to also expand. You're growing. You know, your take up is now so much more. You have a responsibility in this particular sector. You can't just go on with business as normal.
Well, Denzel, there's a lot of pressure on these institutions. And as NSFAS and other stakeholders who are taking the noble responsibility of molding and grooming, future citizens seriously, I must admit to you that it's a big, big, big challenge. And it's a big challenge in the following sense. For example, the Department of Higher Education, Science and Technology is already giving money to the universities, for their infrastructural development, for their learning and teaching, requirements.
Yeah.
Because public institutions are funded by government.
Yes.
But again, Denzel, you just have to step back a little bit and say, in the last 30 years of the new dispensation, how many, just using universities as an example, how many institutions did we build as a democracy or as a country? You will find that there are only two universities that...
I was about to answer you, yeah.
Have been established. That's the University of Mpumalanga and Solplaki. Universities.
Yeah.
Only two universities. Now, you look at the amount of students that have been making their way to tertiary institutions in the last three decades. Do you think that two universities would have accommodated them?
So the responsibility of asking universities to, you know, to shake up, you know, around accommodation issues is one thing, but also government needing to realize that it needs to also get its ducks in a row, also get its, you know, things sorted out, because obviously the institutions, you know, that need to take up these students need to be more, and government needs to come to the table with that one.
Yes, I think the point that I'm making, I am saying that that should be the context.
Absolutely.
Even as we push the university,
yeah.
Because I, for example, went to Vets University myself.
Yeah.
And in 1990, I mean, that's like 33 years ago, when I landed at Vets University, the pressures on the universities to provide accommodation were already there.
Yeah.
And if I can share this with you, there was a residence at Vets University called Glyn Thomas. Guess where this student residence was? It was located at next to Baragwanath Hospital, which is currently known as Chris Hani, in Soweto. So we had to travel from Glyn Thomas in Chris Hani, Soweto, and be bussed into Bramfontein. So I think the other point that one can mention is that the established universities, such as your University of Pretoria, maybe Vets University, are in built-up areas. There could also be some limitation in terms of how much infrastructure they can, you know, develop around them, even if there was funding. But I think the point that I alluded to earlier, that should serve as a context for whoever wants to look into finding a solution into this whole thing, is the fact that the infrastructure has not grown in tandem with the growth in student populations.
Yeah.
I mean, let me take, for example, Vets University. 33 years ago when I was there, I have not seen new lecture theaters, new libraries, new everything. So I would assume that the current infrastructure that serviced me 33 years ago is the one that is supposed to service the student population that has grown quite exponentially.
Yeah, I get the point that you're making. Slumezi, let's go to the lines. I want to take Mpo in Irene in Centurion. Mpo?
Hello?
Hello, Mpo. Are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Mpo.
Yes, my question is much more on the person.
Mpo? Mpo, let's try to fix your line. Hold on, let me see. Mpo.
I can hear you.
I can hear you now, Mpo?
Yeah.
Mpo is gone. Let's go to Mazengite in Pretoria, but let's try to get Mpo back. Mazengite?
Hey, good evening, Denzel, and good evening to your guest as well.
Yes, Mazengite.
Yes, I'm sure, Denzel, you'd recall that about 3 or 4 weeks back,
You called about NSFAS.
Yes, yes.
Sure.
So there's an issue at the University of Venda where about 125 final year students are wrongfully affected by the NSFAS N plus rule. And I say wrongfully affected in inverted commas. Because since I last spoke to you, Denzel, what has also emerged from this situation is that the university, when it sends its qualifications data to NSFAS as the funder, these extended qualifications are intentionally registered as a 3-year degrees, you know, and not 4-year degrees. So hence, there's now a clash between NSFAS and their policies and the university, because now these students are no longer eligible for funding, whereas they are final year students. And in terms of the NSFAS requirements, they actually still qualify if had the university not falsified this information. So I wanted to understand from your guest, what measures do they have in place to ensure that institutions are being held accountable in instances of misrepresentation? Because I mean, if the university deliberately misled NSFAS into funding the students. While they know for a fact that these qualifications for which students are, you know, are registered are not accredited by the Department of Higher Education.
Masengita, let's put that to him. Let me also just go to Thato, who is in Pretoria. Thato? Hello, Thato?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Thato.
How are you?
I'm good. And how are you, Thato?
I'm enjoying it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You know what, Thato? Let's just fix this thing that's Lumezi thinks between, you know, let's fix this thing. Me and you are awake at this particular hour, and he finds it strange that me and you are awake.
Okay.
Yeah, and he says, you know what, normally he's fast asleep at this particular point because he doesn't think anybody's up and listening.
He's listening.
Working.
No, we were listening to Power all
Thank
time.
You, Thato. Thank you, Thato.
Yes.
Thato, what's on your mind?
Okay, I just wanted to ask something. They're doing great work in terms of capping, let's say, the accommodation and everything.
Yes.
Just the increase as well, I'm glad, for the student. My question, though, is that, like, you know, previously NSFAS was not a bursary, right?
Yeah.
Other students were funded, and then... So what are they doing with regards to recovering that money so that more students can be funded and they can study? Are they, is there a database linked to SARS, Department of Labor? I'm just interested in that. Are they getting people to pay?
Those who would have been on the system whereby you should be paying back.
Yes. Like, we need to get back that money. So I'm just interested to know.
Oh, I like that. We need to get back that money. Whoa.
Yes.
Thato. Are you in a financial accountant, Thato, or something?
Oh, how did you know? No, Denzel, you know what? I think that's frustrating for me. Where you meet people who are like earning well, you know,
and you were
funded. But why are you not paying back? The reason for me just doesn't justify why they're not paying back.
Thato in Pretoria, let me go to Slomezi. Slomezi, there's the vendor issue there, but let's start with Thato.
Yeah,
And did you see what I did there, Slomezi?
Yeah.
I ganged up with her against you.
I saw that, but you know what, Denzel? I'll still take heed of what my grandfather told me, that the morning sun has got gold in its mouth. So I'll prefer to sleep early so that I can wake up early and look at that sign before. I mean, that sun as it rises before it dazzles me.
let's talk about her concern.
All right. In terms of the bursary, Thato, you caught me there because I do not have statistics of the rate at which we are recovering, you know, the money that was given as loans prior to TEFSA sort of metamorphosing into NSFAS.
Yeah.
I don't know the rate. All I know is that during my time, it was, SARS would just report you in one way or the other, and you would then be expected to pay back the money. And it was a very reasonable, payback arrangement where, if I remember well, we were paying like 5% of your salary or your monthly salary was paying back to TEFSA.
Yeah.
So we all paid it back. But I do get the point, you know, from Thato that there are others that may have survived the net, you know, by who may have been funded previously.
Yeah.
But now, instead of paying back, they are just coasting and going with the new TEFSA arrangement where you are not expected to pay back.
And she makes the point too that you might be really, really earning well now,
losing out, and
you're not paying forward. You know, you're not giving back into the system so that others can benefit.
No, I will. Thank you so much, Thato. I will just find out, you know, to ascertain from our finest people as to whether there was money coming in from. Those that were obligated to pay back at the time.
Sure. Let's go to Venda.
Yes, Mazingita in Venda with the N plus rule.
Mm.
We are actually zeroing in on that problem. We picked it up at various levels. One level was when the codes used for the degrees were kind of inappropriate. And therefore, the system would pick up that, look, you've completed your degree. You shall not be funded any further, because in order for you to enjoy maybe the privilege of the extra year. You should demonstrate that maybe you have failed. Mm. But look, you are registered for a three-year degree, and there is no indication that you have failed any of the years.
Mm.
So the system kicks you out and say you are okay. You have graduated. So it's something that we are, you know, busy trying to resolve.
Sure. Let's try to bring Mpo back into the conversation and see if Mpo can find a better line. Mpo?
I don't know.
Better line, Mpo. Thank you.
Thanks.
Sure.
Just a quick one. Like, I'm having a challenge with my siblings. There are two twins, right?
Right.
So in terms of the threshold, the 350,000 threshold.
Yeah.
Now, they are twins, right? And they're both at the university level.
Mm.
Then when they applied, they both got rejected because of the threshold.
Mm.
Now, when they appeal, there is no, the appeal is not specific in terms of the personal issues. It's more in terms of, I just forgot my wording here, but then it's more based on categories that they don't fall in terms of their specific issues.
Okay.
So now, like, that's essentially my issue, is that I was necessarily going to deal with that issue in terms of being, and I think they are more in the missing middle, like really missing middle, because of now you can imagine a parent with two twins at university level can afford. I mean, 350,000, these are already, if you have one child, it's already missing middle. Now you have two. You have two, and then you can't really afford the struggling. So in terms of, I don't know if your guest, they can assist in terms of that.
Mpo, don't go anywhere, Mpo. Just hold on to the line, Mpo. Let me go to Slomezi. Slomezi?
Yes. Thank you, Denzel. With regard to the threshold of 350,000.
Yeah.
As a requirement for funding by NAFSA.
Yeah.
At this stage of the game, there is no compromise. I know there are other people that have said, for example, even if it were not twins, that would say, I've got two kids, and I'm sitting at, let's say, 350. Mm. Or rather, just slightly above 350.
Yeah.
Perhaps I can pay for the first one, 180,000, which would be like a typical funding for a university student.
Yeah.
But then now when it comes to the second child, I'm actually theoretically below 350 threshold, because I cannot pay for the second one.
Yeah.
And what is NSFAS doing about that?
Yeah.
So, of course, like Paul correctly pointed out, those people would fall under the missing middle. But what the department has done, I don't want to sound like I'm speaking on their behalf. It's just, I think, information that is in the public domain, is that there's a comprehensive funding strategy or funding document that the department has prepared. And then the cabinet is looking into that. It has already been submitted to cabinet for consideration. It is specifically going to deal with the missing middle, which has, invoked a lot of responses.
Mm.
And I think, Denzel, you would have had Dr. Adam or Professor Adam Habib, you know, talking about the decision that the former President Zuma took, you know, avoiding the 400 billion rand cost of free education in the country and so on.
Mm.
So, but that is being addressed. So in the case of Mpo, if the threshold is above 350, our system and our current guidelines are going to kick the twins out.
That's it.
Unfortunately. And even if he were to appeal, we've got an independent tribunal that looks at cases that are unique and beyond the usual run-of-the-mill cases of somebody being declined because they don't qualify academically or because they are below the threshold and so on. But as I listened to him, his case would not even fall under that one. It would fall under the new regime that is being proposed, which will have a loan element, you know, to it, so that the coffers can be replenished by those that can.
So that's the way they need to go.
Exactly.
Okay. That's it. Point in Irene Centurion, maybe that's the route to take, Chief. Slumezi Skosana, I want to say, Brur, you know what I'm going to do with you, Brur?
No, I don't know.
I'm going to bring you back here for these midnight conversations. I think the conversations are so, so informed, Brur. So I hear what your grandfather says, and I know what, and I know about all this, sun coming up and viewing that, and the early bird catches the early worm and all of that, Chief. But me and you should have more of these conversations. I think.
No, let us do that so that we can, assist a lot of people about just knowing what NSFAS is doing, because people have come out accusing NSFAS of causing instability on campuses and so on. And then I would sit back and say, but where's the missing dimension here? Because I know we take our noble responsibility of grooming the young people of this country into responsible citizens so that in the future they can respond victoriously to the challenges. But in our effort to do so, we get tarnished and portrayed in a bad light. But I think conversations of this nature will bring us closer, and it will give us they will give us the opportunity to explain things without being defensive, you know.
Slomezi Skosana, thank you so much for coming on to Power Perspective.
Thank you so much, Denzel, and enjoy the rest of your night.
Thank you. Slomezi Skosana, of course, is NSFAS spokesperson.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.